There's a lady who's sure all that glitters is gold, and she's buying a stairway to heaven.
Oh, my God.
Oh,
that is worse than I could have imagined. Well, yesterday our conversation with Fran Lebowitz got us thinking. Did you hear her? She railed against nostalgia. No, it's not her singing.
Because
she was railing against nostalgia and retro as a plausible sign of a general deadening in American pop culture. She particularly took on nostalgic music, which made us wonder how and why music has this power to begin with. Emotional power, physical power, the power to rule over our memories with its melodies and rhythms. And, you know, we found the perfect fellow to help answer that question. Joining us from Nottingham, England is John Powell, author of How Music Works. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
So there are actually important psychological and physical reasons why music has such an impact on us. Why did you decide to explore this in your new book?
Well, I tried to put together all the interesting bits of information I could find about music because I trained as a musician initially. I wanted to be a rock guitarist like everybody else in the world. And there's a long queue for that job, so I eventually trained as a scientist instead. So I did both bits of training, and I thought it'd be interesting to discuss music, on a logical level, but in standard English, just normal conversational English.
And some of the experimental data in your book involves you actually playing. And I want to give you an example of some of the kinds of things that you discuss in your book, How Music Works. Here is you playing the guitar in a very straightforward way. And then the second example is you changing things around. And this is in many ways the pathway to emotional impact that music has. First of all, example one. And here's the second example. Now, in both cases, John, you're doing a fine job there playing the guitar, but the second differs from the first. How and what impact do you suspect that has?
Well, these are two techniques which lots of musicians use to bring tears to your eyes if you're in the audience. Basically, I'm using two techniques there. One is called vibrato, and what I'm doing there with the string playing the tune is I'm pulling and pushing on it a little bit to give a wobble to the note. It gives it some sort of emotional depth. And the other thing I'm doing is I'm not playing all the notes exactly in time. I'm stealing some time off some notes and making them shorter than they should be, and other notes I'm making longer. So you come up to a long high note and you hold it for a little while. And both these two effects, that effect's called rubato. There's actually a little video of me doing this if you go to the Amazon page for my book, and you can see me doing it. And basically these two techniques together are very commonly used by lots of musicians to put more emotion and drama into the music.
And so when you get to the orchestral level, and here's a master, Franz Schubert, you've got a lot of things in play. Let's listen to this famous clip. Of course, the theme from the first movement of the unfinished Schubert symphony brings tears to your eyes.
Yeah, it does. He's also using a lot of harmony in there to build up tension and relax it again, because notes in combination form the harmony, and you can deliberately put tension in there by making the sound slightly unpleasant and then relaxing it later.
And in fact, our memories are sort of bonded with the idea that this is an unfinished symphony, that he died before it was finished, so we get that sort of pathos all there directly in the harmony.
Yeah.
I mean, of course,
right.
Not intentional, but that's what music does to us. In a very different way, music does this to all of us. Listen to this. But now, this gets to the heart of the whole nostalgia question. You know this hit tune, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you could imagine yourself playing guitar behind it, right?
I hope so, yeah.
There's something about the rhythm of pop tunes that makes them not only infectious, but memes that take over your mind. Why does that happen?
Well, the most irritating version of this is when you get an earworm, when you get a song in your head that you can't get rid of. And basically, pop music composers do concentrate a lot on getting the very beautiful melodies going, and they're very infectious and very easy to remember, because with a piece of pop music, what you do is repeat the same tune over and over again, so it has to be a good one to start with.
But the beat also is an attraction. I mean, the rhythm is first of all, rhythm is so ancient. And secondly, it sort of creates all this sort of body activity. I mean, a song like that just gets you moving and connects you in a whole different way.
Yes. In fact, we like basically all rhythms, and they excite us to various different ways. On a Sunday afternoon, you might want a very relaxing rhythm in your home. And on a Saturday morning, you might want something a lot more lively. So we do appreciate all the different rhythms. And pop music has a fairly wide range of rhythms, from the dance stuff to the very slow ballad.
All right. So from the sublime here to the terrifying. So, I'm scared of sharks because of this music, not because anything sharks did to me.
Well, actually, it's surprising. We do learn a lot about how to respond to music as we go through our lives. And we're actually taught how to respond emotionally to certain sorts of music by film composers. And that's why we all respond romantically to slow violins and piano. If we hear that sort of music, we automatically start thinking of romance, because in lots of films, the stars start kissing each other whenever the slow violins and piano kick in.
Although I can't believe that if we train little babies to listen to the Jaws theme and look at like peaceful pictures of love and peace, that they would grow up thinking that sharks were like fun pets.
No, the composer's using a couple of techniques there, which are always a bit worrying to the human. One is that the rhythm's uneven. And that would give us a fear response, really, because we're not sure what's going on, sort of insecurity. And also, he's using two notes only one semitone apart, and they will clash always. If you play them together, they make a horrible wobbling noise because they're competing for your attention rather than supporting each other.
Stravinsky did this very well long before John Williams. But let's end it on sort of a note of home. Here's Paul Robeson.
Let us break bread together on our knees. Let us break.
Now, I know you don't go in much for Thanksgiving up there in Nottingham, John Powell, but there's something about a song like this and a voice like that that says home on so many different dimensions, emotionally and physically in the ear.
Yeah, it's very beautiful.
And, Paul Robeson has one of the best voices of all time, but why does the human voice bond to us so much like that?
Well, I think it's just from, we're used to a lot of our emotions coming from other human voices, people telling us that they love us or hate us. So it always has a lot of intrinsic emotion in a human voice. And instead, put it to music and you're onto a winner, really.
Well, John Powell, author of How Music Works, you can sort of feel it right there in the voice of Paul Robeson. Thanks for joining us, John.
Thank you very much.
When I fall on my knees with my face to the rising sun, oh, Lord, have mercy if you please.
We used to have Thanksgiving dinner at my grandparents' every year, and my grandfather sang that song.
Oh.
It did not sound anywhere as good. More like the Dying Cat version of Let Us Break Bread.
That's
together.
A goosebump, no matter whether you hear it on kazoo or not,
gorgeous.
I think, to me.
If you are heading home or wherever you're headed for the holidays that you call home, are you going by plane? Obviously, many people upset by the new TSA screening methods. Others just want to get on the plane and fly without any delays. We want to hear about your experience.
Sat down together
as you move through the busiest travel season of the year. When you're at the airport, text your story to 69866. Include the word scan with your report from the airport. I'm Celeste Headlee.
He's Paul Robeson. I'm John Hockenberry. This is The Takeaway.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.